and welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 8-6. I am your host, Sean Nola Kirkland. With me, as always, are the founder of the feast, Robert Desert Eagle Allen.
This is an 8-5? Who's doing it? Why are there school children applauding?
I love it.
Who's doing that, damn it?
Who is doing that is the eater of the feast, Blue Swim, Aaron last name.
Oh, God.
And laughing at it is the thief of the feast? I don't know, the Hamburglar. Samurage, Morris.
Yeah. I'm okay with being the thief. That's cool.
That's going to get really old, right?
Now.
Blue, you need to pull up like a whole plethora of sound effects so that we can use several different ones.
No, we're not turning into AM radio. Fuck that.
But, anyway, before we get too far off track, which we've already done, let's get started with asking Deagle what he's been playing this week.
Well, if I sound a bit off tonight, it's because I just got done playing a little bit of Gears of War 3 before the show, which probably killed more brain cells than doing a line of Drano. It's a technical marvel and all, but between things like it's a very linear game. It's got a shoulder button that tells you your way to your next waypoint. It has teammates that are screaming what to do. There's even an on-screen guide. I mean, the game just kind of bludgeons you.
Did you see the video of they did? I think it's chapter 2 without firing a bullet.
No, you can do that. You can get through the game
if you play it on normal. The AI for your squad mates is actually good enough that you can play through the entire second chapter without firing a single bullet.
That I do like, because Battlefield, the second Battlefield, your squad was so bad, their marksmanship was so bad, they would rarely hit an enemy. Is kind of cool.
You got to scale it back some, though, otherwise you're not playing the game anymore.
Sure. But I don't know. I'd much rather have the AI actually kill an enemy or two. But they tend to get in the way for me. But there's little things, like there's a fire in front of you, and right in front of it there's a fire extinguisher. And I'm thinking, I wonder what I should do. So, I don't know. I'm going to stop talking bad about Gears. It's a competent game. It's just not for me. I don't know. I never like shooting things 30 times. 3 or 4 is kind of my limit. I don't know.
Well, that's nice of you to, give it...
It just feels like when you're shooting the locust that many times, it's not as interesting. It's just like you're hosing them off,
Right.
Rather than shooting them. But one thing I really like this week, I just got in this week, is FIFA 12. And I wanted to start off by talking about this kind of unexpected surprise. I did like 11, but 12, wow, just blew me away.
Really?
I've always enjoyed soccer games, and especially the FIFA series as of late. I think it's really grown over the past decade, just kind of like the sport itself. One of the things I think that has helped is that soccer itself, the sport of soccer, lends itself to, a interactive adaptation. And by that, I mean, when you play a basketball game, and even though I do like the NBA 2K series, the scoring still feels like a dice roll to me. You can give the ball to your superstar and you put him in the right position, but when the game ultimately decides whether or not you make the bucket based on your stats, and some of that is probably going on beneath the hood in FIFA, just like NHL, but the game really conveys the sensation that you're in control. When you take a shot, you are interpreting, the goalie, your angle, the speed, you're looking for that opening, which really makes it, kind of thrilling. And I really like the trick that the game uses when you approach the goal in EA Sports games, when you're in the Be a Pro component, and it simulates kind of the flow of adrenaline there. And it's almost like it switches to this Gears of War really low perspective as you approach the goal.
And then you shoot him.
Yeah.
Literally.
No. Like level 2, you don't shoot. So anyway, one of the things that EA has done to make FIFA feel more organic is change what they call the impact engine. Even as late as last year, when the players collided, it seemed like the game went into this complex animation system that it either seemed maybe stat-based or random. It looked at the weight or it looked at the proficiency of the individual athletes. And this one... when you perform a slide tackle and it decides who strips the ball, It feels more or less like it's looking at these organic things. It's looking, analyzing speed, weight, body parts, arms, legs, things like that. The downside is that you can occasionally get these weird spinning players. Like one of my midfielders was twirling around like he was doing Black Swan over there. But for the most part, it really makes you feel like you're in control, which I like a lot. It's kind of like what they were doing with some of the tackling in Madden there. And the other change comes in defense, where when I would play before, you know, I wasn't the best FIFA player. I'd switch to the closest player, I'd try to make a slide tackle, and then if the ball carrier slipped past me, then I'd go to the next player, you know, try all the way to the goal. That, or would hold down a button, which would kind of cover the ball carrier. Now, when you lose possession, it feels like you're applying this gentle pressure, and you're altering the flow of the game, making it much more realistic, rather than these series of kind of pass or fail slide tackles as you try to contain the players. And last thing I'll mention is the gamer score, which is built into your game. It tracks everything, every success that you've done, wins and stuff like that, and it gives you an overall level and a gamer score. And one screen, it gives you a breakdown where you are measured against your friends list, and the other shows you the points that you have, which are automatically matched to a favorite team that you pick. And so every week, the game itself, FIFA 12, it tracks the top team by your average in-game score. So meaning, you know, if Manchester United is the most popular, it really is dependent on the average score for those players that follow it. So it's not just a mere popularity contest. Which is kind of cool. I didn't check into it too much, but I did check into, you know, my friends list and see who was on top there, which is kind of cool idea, and I could see more games doing that kind of gamer score built in to extend the life of a game. So it's FIFA. Really digging it. I cool. like it. To me, I think FIFA 12 is going to be, last week, Sean, we talked about the NHL 94. I could see this being the NHL 94. Or that game that's kind of the benchmark for some time. I don't know. Nice. Let me spend, a little bit more time with it, but I really like it.
Is it casual friendly? Because, I mean, I'm like casual, at very best, fan of soccer. I think the only game I liked was on the Game Gear. And it's like I've played FIFA 2005, I want to say, and I was bored to tears and completely understand why a lot of people riot at soccer games.
Not for their team, but they're bored to tears. I would say I also got in PES, the Pro Evolution Soccer, and that might be a little bit more to your liking. If you are a casual soccer fan, I couldn't recommend paying the full $60, but I would wait for that to drop down. And even last year's model, I think, is selling for $20 or $30. So if you're casual, maybe go with PES. It offers a different game. It's not quite as polished as FIFA, but it is interesting. They have a number of drills and components and things like that. It may not have all the teams and squads and everything, but it offers something different. And, you know, being that it comes from Japanese developers, feels a little bit different there.
See, what I liked about the NHL games, the newer ones, is they actually have the NHL 94 mode in it. And I like that you can pick at the beginning of the game which mode you want to do. So, like, when my little brother and I rented it, I would play normal, and he would play in NHL 94 mode, and it still felt good on both sides.
Does it put the star around the player like it did?
No. It's just the exact same control
scheme. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not as much you can do. There's only so far you can master it, but you know, it's a good way to learn.
Did one person have an advantage over the other?
Oh, if you know how to use the new controls, you definitely have an advantage over the person using 94 controls. Because
I didn't know if it was weighted.
Well, I mean, basically what ends up happening is if you take a shot in 94 mode, you're just hitting the shoot button. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of up to the AI to make all the other decisions past that, whereas you have all the control of, you know, do I wind up? Do I, you know, follow through? Do I aim it up at the top left or whatever? And you can make all those split-second decisions in the new mode.
I think at 94, I just had two shots. There was the wraparound and the one-timer.
Yeah.
Everything else was just a shot on goal. I was just wasting your time. That was the only two ways to score. Next is probably, is undoubtedly, the most peculiarly named game we're going to be talking about this week.
Say that again?
Peculiar.
Because I was already thinking of the title, Grotesque Tactics 2 Dungeons and Donuts. Yeah, which sounds like a really bad iPhone parody game.
It sounds like a name that, like, where people take, like, four different words or six different words and just kind of, like, toss them all in a hat and pull out random random words and say, this is going to be the second word and this will be the fourth.
Well, I feel like the game is sort of like that too, right, Dale?
Yeah, you beat me to the punch on that one. It is a PC game that when you start, you're immediately going to think, oh, this is a Diablo clone, because it has that same isometric view. And at first, I thought it was going to be real time, because movement was accomplished by either clicking the mouse, you know, telling your character where to go, or using the arrow or WASD buttons there. So when the game opens, you're this character who's your paper doll appears to be wearing this really bad emo wig. I mean, it's I'm not sure if it's tongue-in-cheek funny or not. The first quest is delivered by what looks like to be the dude from Big Lebowski.
Nice.
His name is Holy Avatar. And he's got this, you know, long flowing hair, sunglasses, and he tells you need to grab this elven shield to continue. So at that point, the game, unexpectedly for me, turned into a point-and-click adventure. And mind you that the game is still early, but as such, it is still a pretty big resource hog. I had to get it running at a pretty good clip, I had to lower the detail and resolution. And that really didn't help me because I had to find these scissors to cut the shield from this cadaver. And that was kind of done through trial and error because I couldn't see the scissors. I had to just kind of point and click my way around the small introductory environment. But once I got past that, and once you get into the game's combat, that was a little bit more interesting. It uses traditional turn-based mechanics rather than, you know, the just click on monster stuff that's been done to death. But later the game, it does offer one kind of unique thing where the party members don't get along, so you have to manage their egos in order for them to be effective, which
that's
is kind
cool.
of a cool idea. Yeah, the game has a few good ideas, but it seems really early yet. I can tell you it's not going to be my cup of tea, but for someone who likes the humor in it, I know Pokemon gets kind of referenced and poked fun of a lot. It's got a little bit of originality in its amalgam of different different game types. So, you know, if you can get into that, it might be worth overlooking the flaws there. I think it's coming out at $20 at the $20.
But this was the demo version, right? I mean, there's stuff that they're going to fix still.
Yeah. There's a list that they put, and I believe it's in alpha state. So there's a ton of stuff, but so far it's not to my liking just because of the actual script. I don't really find it funny. But that's not to say other people won't. I mean, some people could find it.
You're kind of in my wheelhouse now. If you try to be funny and it falls flat, it's like the worst possible thing ever.
Totally. Although,
I think a humor is subjective, though. Like, you know, maybe it falls flat to me, but somebody else might.
Really... That's what I'm saying. But there's no recovering it for me once you've gone down that hole.
Yeah.
Well. Yep. For a different viewpoint, I also am going to be playing that demo version if I can get it to work on my computer, which I have not yet. But assuming I can get it to work, I will check it out, and then we'll see if maybe, you know, someone else... Because, I mean, Deagle, you and I have somewhat similar senses of humor, but also different in some areas, and so I think...
I think you might like it better. For me, I wanted more dungeons, less donuts. You might want more donuts.
Well, I don't really like donuts in real life.
Donuts are the funny part.
Okay. Well, so, good.
And dungeons are the, you know, stereotypical part. Last thing I'm going to talk about is Burnout Crash, which when I saw it on the dashboard, I was a little bit surprised. It was only 800 points instead of the now typical 1,200 point price point. Considering EA is the publisher and... God, I forgot the name of the developer. Criterion's name is on it. I would have thought that they would have milked gamers for a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But after putting a few hours in, I'm enjoying the game. little synopsis before I turn it over to Blue. He was playing it too. The one thing that it is missing for me is variation to the different crash junctions. There are little interesting details in every map, like there's these pits that open up that you can push your car into, and then you get to relaunch your car, and you get bonus points for pushing other cars into. There's a pizza truck that if you destroy, you get to spin this wheel, and you might get a bonus. But the game really doesn't change wildly from level to level. You know, there's all these little bonuses, but the junctions are all kind of same-ish. So, if you've seen a few levels, you've pretty much seen what the whole game has to offer. But still, I think what is there is good and probably worth the 800 points if you are a Burnout fan. So each level starts, you pick out one of your cars from, you know, one of your unlocked cars, and then you head into an intersection to start the crash. And you can totally miss, you know, anything. I've done that a number of times, and then you have to restart over. Some variations prohibit you from letting five cars pass, and others are timed. When the other cars, the AI cars, are crashing, you are filling a gauge, which allows, when you press a button, to explode things around you. So basically what you're trying to do is create, number one, as much damage as possible, and then you're also trying to create this perfect obstruction. And since the cars catch on fire and blow up and disappear, you have to constantly, you know, work on that. The one thing I really like is the use of music clips. They use things like Spandau Ballet's Gold, trying to think, the Weather Girls, Raining Men, and there's just these 5 seconds.
Also, clips. Cops, Bad Boy,
Ice Baby, Miami Sound Machine. There's a whole, bunch of campy clips in there, and these little 5 second.
I can think of another game that did that. Vice City.
5 second clips.
Oh, no. Vice City had, like, the whole song.
Oh, yeah, you know, this works so well because you don't have to listen to the whole song. It's just, like, the cheesiest part.
Oh, that's cool. I do like that.
And it's almost, at one time, there was the notion that I think you could sample something for less than 7 seconds, and you didn't have to pay the person, you know, back when sampling started. And I wondered, I'm sure they paid, you know, people for the rights too, but they're just short enough to be within that 7 second threshold, which I thought was kind of amusing. But anyway, these little sound clips, they help drown out the announcer who just repeats himself way too much. He's not very organic at all. He's, you know, say little things like, "I think there's a storm coming."
Is he really a redneck?
He's an effeminate redneck.
That's exactly what I'd use.
I think
to
there's a storm
himself.
Coming, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it.
I just don't know if my heart can take it.
Yeah. So he's interesting, but you want to replay the crash, junctions over and over, but you don't want to hear the exact same, you know, the same repetition over and over again. I wish that he said, you know, I think there's some clouds that are getting, you know, cozy up there. You know, just
what? Are you crashing into clouds or something?
Maybe there's
that's weird.
Maybe you fight Cupid.
Beagle just wants him to have Tourette, so he says something different every time.
That would be good.
And a lot more cussing. That'd be awesome.
I don't know that I think swearing is always necessary to make something funny.
Don't play Gears of War.
Speaking of which, yeah, right. I think in some cases it makes it less funny. Well, are you done, Deagle?
Yes, I'm done.
Well, wait. What was Blue's take? What was Blue's take on Burnout?
Yeah. I want to move to Blue.
Basically. I mean, when I heard.
Did you like it, y'all?
I done loved it. Hoo-wee, I had to take off my cowboy boots. I'm so excited.
Oh my god.
Yeah. When I first heard that Burnout Crash was going to be top down, I kind of zoned out and really didn't give it another look after I heard that. But when I actually sat down and tried it, I realized that the top-down perspective actually worked pretty well for aiming your aftertouch.
Mm-hmm.
That you put, basically, after you've exploded the car, you can use the control stick to maneuver it to hit like another car in another lane or bump up against a building or something like that. And that was, you know, going into it, I was comparing it to Burnout 3 Takedown. I loved the crash mode in that. I was like, I got to a certain point in the career mode with everything else, and then I just just grinded the crash mode. I loved it. I think I maxed out most of the stages in it. It mm-hmm. was easily my favorite mode about it, of Burnout 3.
Yeah, that was good.
And, you know, I wasn't sure if it was going to be able to quite capture the same love or affection from me as Takedown did. But when I got to play it, it felt like a top-down Burnout 3 crash mode, which it obviously should. But it felt exactly like it sounds. It plays really, really exactly like Burnout 3's crash mode did. I mean, except it's on steroids now, because, you know, before you had the crash meter and you had to aim the car to get the multipliers, you know, we use an aftertouch or something like that. And with this, basically, you have, natural disasters and stuff meters up at the top, you fill it up and you can get like a bulldozer will go through, or like good cop or bad cop, which is where the
that's when it plays push it salt and pepper.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one thing that wasn't in the Burnout 3, and that adds a bit to the arcade feel of it. I mean, it feels like the crash mode from Burnout 3, but It also feels more arcadey than the crash mode did in Take.
So does it feel like San Francisco Rush 2049?
It's been a while since I played San Francisco Rush. Actually, I mean, it's. I'm not quite sure if it's if I can really compare it to San Fran Rush.
Don't let it push you into it. Now here's my thing, Blue, and let me ask if you felt the same way. Burnout 3, the levels themselves would last, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes. And these ones seem to last quite a bit longer, and they almost overstay their welcome. I feel
it's
long before you get to that big hurricane that wipes, you know, clears the screen. And yeah, it does have a payoff, but they seem to last a little too long for me.
Yeah, it's like there are three different levels of, you know, meter events that you can trigger. And I think it could have done without the second one, just been like you fill up and get like the bulldozer or the cops or whatever. Right. And then you work your way up to the natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to you get the small event, then you get the medium-sized event, and then you get the large event. And the large event, the effectiveness of it is determined by how many cars, if any, you let escape, you know, unscathed throughout the stage. If you like have 2 of 5 X's, you'll only get 60% of the final natural disaster event thing, whatever.
Right. The hurricane.
I wish there was a cloud right at Twinkies.
That's what they say.
Awesome.
No, it just sounds like what you would expect the announcer to say. It's like the first set of stages, it's like set in like this kind of a, well, it's a country theme, you know, you got the guy kind of talking like this. And then the next three stages are in an airport, and you hear this kind of a doofus air traffic controller saying, "I spilled my coffee in the control console. Don't land right now." And then, like, the third and the third stage is, like, one of those, like, late 80s, early 90s surfer dude, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle types, where he's, like, kind of talking like this. "Yo, we're on the lifeguard tower, and it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of waves out there. Cowabunga!"
That was a little Marcus Fenix in there.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love Marcus Fenix as a Ninja Turtle. That would be pretty rad.
I can't stand Marcus Fenix.
But yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying it. I mean, if you're comparing it to the home console Burnout crashes or Burnout crash modes, it is going to be a similar but different experience. It's you know, the top down perspective, it makes it easier for the, you know, like I said, for the aftertouch, right. But it also makes it feel more arcade like, as opposed to how Burnout 3 felt, where it's a racing game and you have crashes in it. It's, this one's just, it feels more arcade-y.
I didn't think the, I thought one of the things that, that maybe didn't translate as well is when you had that low third-person perspective in the original Burnout series, you would go into an intersection really blazing fast, and sometimes you'd think, okay, am I going to clip that bus? Oh, maybe I'll, you know, maybe I'll get this. And when you have that overhead godlike perspective, that sensation isn't there. And I didn't
listen.
Think that,
God's got to drive too. How do you think he gets around to places?
I don't know.
don't ask practical questions.
I know, Jesus. So I didn't quite get that sensation. Like driving was kind of boring.
Yeah, it's you don't even have to hold down anything to drive. It's just tilt the control stick left to right to drive. And
you know what? I forgot to use the Kinect to lay an egg.
Weird.
That was last week's trivia, Sage.
Weird. Sorry that I missed it.
We have to stick in a, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Yep. Wouldn't be a Sam Ridge podcast without some Jesus insertion.
Whoa.
good times.
Is that a reference to The Exorcist?
No, that's a reference to Put It In.
Okay.
I apologize to our Christian listeners.
Sorry. Hey, what man.
Christian listeners? I'm sure they all turned out by now. Tuned out by now.
Probably, that's true.
Sorry, y'all.
Anyway, back on track.
The star is a Bruin.
So final word on Burnout Crash is it is okay.
Yeah.
Samurai Age.
Yes.
What?
It's have cooking. You been playing?
Well, since you asked, Deagle.
I'm actually looking forward to hearing about this.
I finally got some free time this week from my studies to play some Hell's Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And what I got to say to Hell's Kitchen is hell's yeah. Because everybody, you know, had commented and said that it wasn't very fun and that Gordon Ramsay, you know, wasn't entertaining enough because he'd been censored. But actually, I think that the censoring doesn't have any negative impact on his commentary to you. He still makes really ridiculous comments, which is why I think Gordon Ramsay's funny. Like, you know, he's like, finally, I've tasted something delicious. Or if you're screwing up, you know, he'll be like, get your fucking ass to it, and it'll just bleep out the swear words. But it's still, like, the intention is there, so it's still
bleep
funny.
Out the swear words on the show, too.
Does it actually bleep it out, or is it just they left it, they just kind of...
No, they bleep it out. No, they bleep it out like it's censored.
Like a Jerry Springer...
Wait, there's like actually the TV voice? Show. There's voiceover?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you've got... So the way it's set up is on the bottom screen, you have all the action stuff that you're doing. And in the top screen is Gordon Ramsay standing there with his arms crossed, looking very commanding. With flames, with columns of fire on either side of him that sort of indicate how well you're doing, which is cool.
Sounds like a fever dream.
It makes it a little disconcerting that, like, his forearms look more realistic than his face. Like, his face...
That's the way he looks in real life.
More so than in real life. Like, he's standing there, and every time he flexes his arms, like, it looks like arms that are on there flexing, and you can see the muscles, but his face looks really, like, cartoony, not quite right. So it's kind of disconcerting, because it's like cartoon face on what would otherwise be a, you know, almost real-looking person. I really like the dynamic of figuring out the best order to do things in. You have one guy that you control. This is a really understaffed restaurant, apparently, that you run. So as you are playing through the game, you get more and more tables in this room, and you have a button that allows you to go from the room to the kitchen.
Wait. It's Diner Dash?
It's Diner... Nah,
it's okay. Diner Dash with some cussing bleeped out.
It's Dino fucking Dash!
I don't feel like it's the same. I mean, basically, I know what you're saying, but the feel is not the same because okay. I think the pacing is different. Like, it's a very common dynamic to any sort of kitchen cooking game where you seat the people, you have to take their order, you have to bust their dishes when they're done, and after you take their order, the order goes to the kitchen, you have to, you know, actually pick up their food.
Right.
that part is sort of standard, but the pacing is kind of cool and interesting. The whole point is that it goes really fast. And you get more and more ingredients in the kitchen, like I'm up to 4 ingredients, and each item you're making for a table of either 2 or 3 people has 1 or 2 or 3 of the ingredients in it. And so you have to plan out what order you're going to put. You know, if you've got like a red, a green, and a yellow ingredient, right, and you've got 3 dishes, you have to plan out what order you're going to put them in and then re-prepare, because you want everything to go on the burners at around the same time so that it comes off at the same time, because the only way you can get a high score is if the food comes out like hot and good. And if you take it off the heat, it will get cold, and if you leave it on the heat, it'll start to burn. So if you don't plan it out right, then you might have one thing done like 5 seconds before something else, and then the table's going to be pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gordon's going to be pissed off. But what's interesting about
Wait. I was wondering, are you on a first-name basis with Gordon?
We have quite the intimate relationship going on, actually.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wish.
I can't get my Camping Mama game, because Gordon Ramsay's jilted relationship with Cooking Mama.
Cooking Mama's heart belongs to Gordon and no one else.
From Hell's Kitchen to Hell's Bedroom.
Ew, gross.
Jesus.
Because now what I'm picturing is Gordon Ramsay and the big dressed-up Cooking Mama puppet that Sean posed for in a photo at E3, and that's just nasty. So gross. Anyway, what's weird about the pacing that I haven't figured out, like, why this has happened yet, the first level, like, it's divided into, like, you know, novice, and then you progress, and it's like, cool, you're better, now you're an apprentice chef, blah, blah, blah. But the whole first level of novice, and then the whole, it's called something else, and then half of the next level are easy as, pardon the pun, but easy as pie. I mean, it's like, completely, I got 100% score on all of them. And then all of a sudden, I got to, like, the next level, I can't get past a 65%. And all the other, like, you know, rooms of that level are also that way. So rather than having, like, a learning curve that, you know, continues along as you go, it seems like it went from being easy to impossible in the space of, like, 2 seconds. And I'm not sure if I have suddenly started screwing something up, whereas before I was a brilliant cook, or if the game has a flaw in it, or if it's just this section and then it's going to level out. I don't know. So that was my only problem with it, but I like the funny moments of it, and I don't think they're supposed to be funny. Like your waiter guy, when he's dumping the bus dishes into the bus tub, it looks like he's taking off his pants. I'm not sure why they animated it that way, but he gets up to the bus tub, and I guess what he's doing is like lifting a garbage bag or something, but it looks like he bends down, takes his pants off, and puts them in the bus tub.
You got to pay extra at that restaurant.
Which I love, because I wish I'd been able to do that at the restaurants I worked at, because it would have made me feel a lot better about my job.
Just toss these khakis in the dishwasher for me.
Pretty much.
You know what? You should, once you get your law degree and finish all your law internship and stuff, you should go back to the restaurants you worked in and go up to a random table and be like, can I take your order? And they'll be like, yeah, I'd like. And we'll be like, no, I can't take your order. I'm a lawyer. And then walk out.
I don't think I'm that big a douchebag, but maybe I'll pay someone to do it, because it would be hilarious.
You have to be a lawyer, and lawyers won't stoop to that level unless they're the lawyer that's lawyering. Lawyer.
Yes. So moving on from Hell's Kitchen, which is hilarious and fun, if not a little easy. I also played Kirby Mass Attack.
Yeah. I want to hear about that one.
I really, really like it. Like, I bought it because it wasn't too expensive, and I was waiting for, you know, other things to come out, like Sola to Robo. And I was like, well, Kirby looks like a pretty good game. I'm going to check it out. I haven't played a Kirby game in a long time. And it's maybe my favorite game of all of the ones that I've gotten so far. It's really well balanced. It starts out like very Japanese and ridiculous, where it's like Kirby is the hero of the land and a bad guy showed up, and rather than just killing Kirby while Kirby was sleeping in a field, decided to split him into 10 Kirbys that were all a fraction of the power as the real original Kirby, rather than just killing Kirby, which is whatever.
All Kirby games have the worst story ever.
I know. Well, it's funny. Like, I don't mind it because it's right. bad enough that it's mm-hmm. hilarious. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that's the premise, is that you've been split into 10 little Kirbys, and you need to go through stages and eat enough fruit to make more Kirbys so that you can be powerful enough to defeat, like, harder bad guys and, you know, burst through more solid floors and stuff that you can't do when you're just the one Kirby. Mm-hmm. But from this sort of ridiculous, stupid-seeming premise comes this actually really well-balanced and very well-grafted game. You have different lands, and in each land there's a number of levels, and in each level you have options that there's like multiple different pathways you can take through the levels, the point of which is to collect more and more medals. And so I like the choice of pathway. I like that it gives you things where it's like you have to come back to this point with, 10 Kirbys in order to actually open this particular doorway, so you can't do that till later, which sometimes feels really tedious and annoying when they put it in sort of a difficult-to-get-to place in a stage, and you get there, and then you're like, well, this is crap, I have to come back anyway. But this, it's challenging enough that you're not upset about it being too easy, but it's not so hard that you feel frustrated by the fact that, like, it's going to be too hard to get all those Kirbys and then come back and do this later. Mm-hmm. The attack is good. It has a nice balance of, utilizing the stylus. I thought there would be a little more D-bag and D-pad sound too much the same. I need to call it directional pad, or I'm going to get those confused. So the directional pad is actually not used almost at all, which I thought was interesting because I thought it would feel unbalanced given that. Mm-hmm. But it really doesn't, because the little Kirbys basically just follow you wherever your stylus is. And if you want them to go up somewhere, you touch them with it, and then you move up, and they follow this little star path. I do miss the flying. I mean, I remember games when Kirby could fly, and in this one he doesn't fly, which makes me sad.
You mean when he was on a cloud, or he would just inhale and kind of float around?
When he inhales and floats. Okay. But I liked the self-sufficiency because I feel like it's hard to get immersed in the game as a... Although this is something that would... maybe be something certain players would prefer. You don't really feel like there's a story going on that you are not involved in. Mm-hmm. So, like, for Kirby to fly or move, you actually have to, help him get up somewhere, or you have to direct him where to move. Mm-hmm. Which, on the one hand, for me, takes me out of this being, like, a, separate imaginative world that I'm immersed in. But if you like feeling like you're a controlling aspect of the game you're playing, it definitely allows you to feel that way. So whatever your preference is, that's sort of where that falls.
Did you ever play Canvas Curse? Canvas? Yeah. Is that the name, Sean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever play that?
I did not.
Oh, okay. That was a good one.
Was it?
Yeah, it was interesting. There were a lot of iPhone, Android games that copied that mechanic where you draw a path for Kirby to follow on screen mm-hmm. with a limited amount of ink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Canvas Curse is interesting to look back on because when the DS first came out, people were like, I don't know about this whole touchscreen concept, and that was like the first game that really sold people on it.
Yeah, that and Yoshi, was it Yoshi Touch and Go?
Yeah.
I don't think that one was so much, it was good, but I don't think that one had the impact.
Oh, really?
The impact that Canvas Curse did.
I know a lot of people didn't like Touch and Go, but I did. It was kind of like a speed run type game where you would go and try to, or a score run type game where you try to nail as much as possible. Like, the game itself was short. what did I say?
You try to nail as much as possible? Sounds like one of those Japanese
hentai
games.
One of the shy guys, yeah. Number three, put it in.
Oh god, that's forever going to be referenced now. Put it in.
We need to have Tech Gaming Put It In t-shirts.
Oh my god, yes. If you want us to make Tech Gaming Put It In t-shirts, please send us a request, and if we get enough and can raise money for them, maybe we'll make them, because I would love one.
We'll wear them next year to E3.
Oh yeah, I'll help design them. This will be funny.
I just want to see Sean wear it around.
He won't do it.
A serious talk with somebody.
We're sitting there getting ready.
A couple of Contra bars.
Do you guys want my business card? No? Okay.
No? No, really? Why would you not want our business cards? Anyway, moving off of the putting it in. So Kirby is phenomenal. I definitely, definitely recommend getting it. It is worth the price. You can get it online at Amazon for, I think, like $5 less than you would get it in stores.
Is it 29 or 34?
It's 34, but you can get it new on off of like Amazon for 29.
I'll probably pick it up. See,
here's my thing about the DS right now. Mm-hmm. The last time I turned my DS on was when I reviewed Golden Sun, I think. Was that the last game I reviewed?
Maybe.
Which was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And when I got Shirin the Wanderer and was expecting Camping Mama, I went into my closet to find it. And it's like on a tall shelf. And I don't want to go get it.
What?
Tall shelf? Are we talking about like 20 or 30 feet tall?
No, it's just one of those things that I'm like, I've got all these other things I could be buying stuff for.
Wow.
This shelf is like, I gotta get a step stool.
What about your PSP?
No, just get one of those grabber things.
Oh, no, my PSPs are always within arm's length. Actually, I'm charging my old one right now because White Knight Chronicles Origins. Yeah, I've got my fat one and my PSP Go. But I'm charging the fat one right now because I got White Knight Chronicles Origins in the mail today, and I want to play it on the bus tomorrow.
I think that I think it's hard if you have more than one portable gaming device because I could see like then having to choose, you know, do I really want to go get this or would I rather play this other thing? But I have to say the choices I've made for games on my DS Lite, I mean, I'm up to 5 games now, so that's not a ton, but I'm definitely not regretting buying it, because I...
Yeah, the DS Lite, there is a great DS library. I'm not doubting that at all. I'm just saying...
Screw like, that,
for whatever reason, it's like, ligamist. It's really hard for me to get it down when I've got other things I could be playing.
You need to get one of those grabbers with the suction cups on it.
No,
you know, the kinds that old ladies use to get, like, bags of sugar out from the top shelf.
No, just get a shark.
Shark.
Yeah, the ones at the carnival with the
little you pull the little trigger and at the end of there's a shark.
Weren't those designed to bite people on the ass? Really?
I don't know what they're designed for, but they're hilarious and I love them.
I used to have the Tyrannosaurus one.
Yeah, that one's good too. Then you can have them fight shark dinosaur battle. Anyway, well, I think part of why that's true too, Sean, is because I think there was a whole stint in there for a while where there weren't great DS games coming out. Like Kirby having just come out is you know, it's again phenomenal. It's a little bit cutesy, but I don't think it's so cutesy that it takes away from it, just as my final comment to Kirby. Like it's definitely worth checking out. But Kirby just came out, Solitarobo just came out, which I spent some time playing.
Yeah, I want to play Solitarobo.
Which I really like. It's dynamic. It's, you know, it utilizes both screens really nicely. I haven't had to use the stylus at all yet, and I'm thinking I'm not going to have to, which makes me a little sad because I wanted that balance in there of like directional pad stylus trade off. But other than that, I mean, it uses both screens really well. The, you know, mechanics are good. The gameplay is steady and solid. The only thing I'm waiting on, and I, you know, would love to hear what you guys think about it when you play it, but I'm waiting for it to get hard because it's... oh, Jesus, that's gross, guys. It's too easy. Like, it's not too easy so that it's not enjoyable, but it's kind of too easy. Like, every mission that I've done, every battle that I've fought has been sort of like, really? Was that it?
Well, it's really long, too. Isn't it like 40 hours?
Something.
Let's hope it doesn't get hard as quickly as Gordon.
what I was getting at is it seems like a lot of longer games now take a really long time to ramp up.
Yeah, which I'd rather a nice steady progression and earlier rather than later and then have the bosses. Like, I'd rather you and your skill level and the difficulty level amp up sooner and then the game become more about how do you cleverly use your skills to continue to beat harder and harder bosses.
Yeah.
With a little bit more of a, you know, up incline of skill but not as much as in the beginning, than the other version, which is sort of where this one is going, which is that it's really easy for a long time. Because that the game's not boring me, but the mechanics of that do sort of bore me. Like, I have been really excited for this game, and I'm not going to stop playing it. But there are some moments when I'm like, maybe I'd rather play Kirby right now, because that's a little more challenging than this.
Mm-hmm. I will say, if you're one of the people who's all butthurt about Mega Man Legends being canceled, you might want to pick this up. Because the gameplay is not really similar, but it, the art style is really close, so it'll at least give you a little twinge of nostalgia.
The art style is cool. I mean, the villages are all really detailed, which is nice to see, because most of the other games I've played on here have been really simple. And this is, you know, without having a 3DS that makes everything high def, blah, 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 this is one of the this is one of the games that I've got that actually is, like, really nicely detailed, so that's cool.
I'm looking forward. I should be getting in Dragon Quest Monsters Joker 2, which is another DS game.
Sweet.
Which I heard is very Pokemon-ish.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I want to play. Anyway, the only other game I played, it was a DS kind of week, because that was what I had access to the most. The other game that I played, though, was on the recommendation of someone who commented on our tech gaming website, which I can't remember his name, so I'm going to look it up right now, but it's called Last Line of Defense, and it's at ninjakiwi.com. And it's a free-to-play zombie-killing game, which I quite liked because it gives you lots of opportunity to headshot zombies, which I think there are not many things in the world as fulfilling as headshotting a zombie.
I thought you were going to say there's not many games that offer that.
No, there's plenty of games that offer that, but not all of them are as fulfilling. Oh, Iceman. Iceman is the one who suggested it. He said free games are fun to play too, and yes, that's true. We've talked about them often.
I got a great one for you guys. It's called One Man and His Dinosaur. You guys have to play it.
Is it good?
Made by our friends Megadev from the UK, and yeah, it is really cool. Sean, I think you'll dig the title screen.
What is it called?
One Man and His Dinosaur. It's on, I believe, the Adult Swim website.
I'll Google it. They have good games on Adult Swim. I think they're one of my favorite free-to-play games. Because unlike Newgrounds, which like puts a bunch of crap in your computer and viruses, and the games don't always work very well, like Adult Swim has some real quality stuff on there.
For my free-to-play time, definitely Megadev or the guys. God, what was that ninja game they made? It was one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Free-to-play games. And,
you talked about it, I think, like 10 podcasts ago.
Yeah. And those guys, I think they listen to the show, so they're cool.
No, they are definitely really cool. This game was cool. Last Line of Defense is cool, but it's not super smooth. Like, I couldn't... You upgrade, and after you get so many points, you can upgrade to new weapons, obviously, but... Mm-hmm. After the fourth weapon that I got, I couldn't switch, because you could only have four weapons programmed to the number keys at a time, and I could not figure out how to switch from the four that I had to, like, switch one out for a fifth one. I tried all the buttons I could press, and I couldn't figure out a way.
Did you shift, control, alt, all those?
Control, alt, delete.
No, not that.
No, like, hit shift four. And
alt, F4. And it doesn't have any instructions that tell you how to do that either. So there was no, like, here's how to equip this, or, you know, hit this button.
Flash games are works in progress, and they continually update and things like that. So I'm hoping maybe they'll fix it.
Oh, no, it'll probably get better. It has a nice variety of zombies for you to kill. It's got a nice variety of weapons. The only other problem that I noticed was that if you try and aim the gun too high up, then your mouse goes off the screen, and you're not, like, in the game, you know, page anymore.
Oh.
And that makes it hard to, like, shoot at the top of the screen when the zombies are first.
So you're shooting at your other windows or your document. Yes.
That, oh my god, you know what would be so cool is if they designed a game that actually could process in a way where, like, it made it look like you were shooting your Word documents and stuff if they were up in the background.
There was a shareware game, oh god, million years ago, probably like 46 era game. I think it was called Desktop Toys. Mm-hmm. And it had, like, this, like, spaceship that you could fly around your desktop and shoot holes in it. It had, like, all these different weapons that you could use to destroy your desktop.
And you bought it in, like, packs. If we're thinking about the same one, like, you'd buy, like, a gun pack, which would come with, like, the shotgun and a bunch of stuff, and, like,
flamethrower.
Yeah, and then, like, a rotten food pack, so you could throw tomatoes and stuff.
That kind of reminds me of when they used
to
have
play, so you could send it to your friends on Google Docs. That'd be kind of
This is before Google.
Yeah.
They need to update that.
Because I remember when they also had those little, like, interactive screensaver guys. Like, one was a koala bear, and one was a blonde, I mean, a redhead who's dressed very scantily and pulls guns.
I do remember those.
Was right? Is that Berkeley Softworks? The ones that made the flying toaster screensavers?
No, this is after that. We're talking about, like they had the one purple monkey guy, too.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Say stuff, yeah.
Oh, and they would do weird shit on the...
Oh, yeah, I remember.
The koala would do, like, weird funny things, and then the redhead, if you, like, touched her naughty parts, would, like, pull guns out and shoot you, and it would look like your computer screen was cracking.
Hmm. Interesting.
It was cool. I don't know why people don't do that anymore. I mean,
I think the paperclip burned us all out.
Fuck that paperclip. He didn't do shit, man. He just sat there acting like a prick.
I always replaced him with, like, Einstein or Earth or the dog. Yeah.
Totally. Fuck the paperclip.
Wow, we are way off topic. Let's bring back to video games.
Right.
Is that all you
anyway,
played?
Yes, those four things are everything that I played this week with my considerably small amount of free time.
Alright, well...
There is one question I have for you about Kirby.
Yep.
Have you played Kirby Superstar?
Which one was Kirby Superstar?
Kirby Superstar was the compilation on the Super Nintendo, and it later got ported to the DS. If you have, that's like, I believe it's unanimously referred to as the definitive Kirby game.
Huh.
If you haven't played it, definitely give it a look.
You think it's better on the DS or on the Super Nintendo? I feel like maybe I played it on the Super Nintendo back in the day.
There were some added games and redone graphics for the DS. So if you haven't played it before, maybe it's been a long time since you've played it, you might want to just go ahead and grab it on the DS. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely worth a look if you like Kirby games. And sweet. If you have a Wii, Kirby's Dream Course. Everybody buy Kirby's Dream Course. That game needs a sequel. It's only been 15 years.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Well,
It's on the Wii, and it's been on the Wii for 15 years?
No, it's a Super Nintendo originally... game, but it's on Virtual Console.
Oh, okay.
And it's miniature golf with twisted Kirby rules.
Oh, yeah,
right. Yeah, but I don't think that'll get a sequel, because the whole story behind that was it was just a miniature golf game, and then they didn't think they could sell it, so they turned it into Kirby, and then I don't think that development team is around anymore.
HAL? Wasn't it HAL? HAL Laboratory's still around? Yeah.
Well, either way...
They're owned by Nintendo now.
That was actually the game that got me to go buy a classic controller and a points card for the Wii.
It's a good game.
I love that. Have you ever played multiplayer with that?
Mm-hmm.
And when you really get going with that and you get two really passionate players, the amount of cursing and laughter that game spawns is incredible.
Dude, if there's a lot of laughing and cursing when you're being passionate, I don't think you're doing it right.
Fair enough.
Take it to the top shelf.
Anyway, let's talk about me for a minute.
Yay!
I have been playing Rochard for the PlayStation 3. It's a PSN download. I don't know, is it out on Xbox 360 as well?
No, I believe it's a exclusive.
That is an interesting game. It's sort of a physics-y platformer, which we've seen a lot of lately.
Mm-hmm.
But the setting is sort of this kind of Weyland Yutani sort of asteroid mining group. So it starts out, you're kind of the repair guy on the ship, and you're going around and you're fixing the gravity generator. And when you fix the gravity generator, it gives you control of the gravity of the ship. And then you also have this gun which can pick stuff up. It's got kind of a tractor beam thing. And so you use those two mechanics basically as, you know, you move blocks around as you're moving around. You can lower the gravity so you can pick up heavier blocks, but then you move a lot slower. But you can also jump higher. And you can't drop things as well when the gravity's turned off. So it's a lot of, you know...
Variation?
No, it's a lot of just you using that gravity mechanic to solve puzzles and get around. But it works really, really well, and the setting is really interesting. And it's kind of a bummer because the voice acting is super terrible. to the point where they did a really good job of directing this world and this environment. And like I said, it really does feel like a sort of Aliens, Weyland Yutani sort of setting. But then everybody's got this weird stereotyped accent. So I'm guessing they only had like two guys doing the voice acting, and none of them make sense. Like the business guy comes on and he's got a crazy southern accent, and you're like, you look like you should have a British accent. If I was going to give you a stupid accent, that would be the one I'd give you. But I don't know. It's weird. But it's a lot of fun. If you want to try it out, go ahead and download the demo, because the demo is like half an hour long, so you kind of get a good feel for the game.
Download the demo, y'all!
It's kind of, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to fire you if you can't find some minerals on that asteroid. Us. I do not. It is not my fault. It is the geologist who sent me here. I'm sorry, bud. Okay, bye.
Sucks, yo.
No, I was definitely surprised. It's one of those things that I downloaded it just because free demo, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying it, so I would recommend that.
Well worth the $10, you'd say.
Yeah, definitely worth the download to the demo.
Did you pick up Veronica?
Not yet. I keep looking at it going, I want that. I know I'm going to just turn it on once and go, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like I downloaded the first three since they're free, and I went back and played Resident Evil 3 because that was kind of my favorite of the PlayStation ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just couldn't stick with it. That's one of those things that's kind of best left in the past for me.
I think 4 manages to still hang.
Yeah, four is the first of the modern. Well, I guess there's only two modern ones, but I guess the DS ones. But this first of the modern ones. That one's very playable.
Mm-hmm. It still feels a little weird given today's kind of control scheme. So, you know, it feels a little different. It took me a little while to adapt to it. It took me about half an hour, but once I kind of assimilated, I don't know. I really enjoyed going back to it.
Yeah. But I don't know, the tank control ones, I still really like how weak you feel in those, but at the same time, it's just not something I want to do anymore for whatever reason, which is sad because I love those games, but I just don't love them to the point where I need to play them again.
What was the name of the big monster in 3?
Nemesis.
Nemesis. Oh.
Playable in Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah. Is he... I don't know. One of the things I had was just... It seemed like the pacing of the game, whenever they would want to ratchet up the tension, he would kind of come out and chase you around.
Yeah, and that was always cool. It was random. I mean, there were certain scenes.
After a while, it felt like, okay, Nemesis is going to come out now. I don't know. I could almost predict.
Well, I mean, there were points where it was scripted, but for the most part, like, you could be running around and he could just show up.
Yeah.
And that was always a really cool part of it.
Yep.
And it was also cool that he wasn't invincible. But when you killed him, he didn't stay dead.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it was one of those things where
he was invincible? I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. I'm just saying I thought that was an interesting thing about him, is that you could run from him, but if you were feeling confident, you could take him down. And that's actually how you unlock the Desert Eagle earlier on in the game, is if you kill him enough time, you get enough parts to build it. But it just takes a lot of ammo, so you have to kind of gauge, well, can I get away, and do I have enough ammo to really do this? Am I going to need that ammo later? And that's something you don't see enough of in a lot of games now. There's not the sort of split-second decision-making that you have to do. Because, I mean, that was the thing about Resident Evil, is you could get towards the end of the game and just not have enough ammo to finish the game.
Yep, you would be screwed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that happened to me on 1, 2, and possibly 3 as well.
Yeah, it definitely happened to me in 1.
You would have to manage multiple save files if you wanted to play Resident Evil and just be as frugal as possible. Use that knife.
Yep.
I wish there were more games that were a little more timeless, though, because I feel like Silent Hill, the first one, or like Resident Evil, the first one, I really like those games, but I just can't play them anymore because they're just so clunky compared to how they used to be.
Clunkiness is what makes those games... And I mean, that's the unfortunate thing about me saying that I can't do it now, is that those games are good because they are clunky. They're good because...
They create tension. You know,
yeah, they're not scary because they're zombies in it. They're scary because you fumble around a lot, and even though you think you might be able to do this, there's a really good chance you're going to screw it up. And I don't know, it's just really well designed in that way. Like, I also...
They emulate the sensation of, you know, in movies, the girl running in high heels. They can't run and trips, and the monster catches her.
Yeah, but I feel like there's a way to create... I mean, I don't know. I think that it's an It's something that creates suspense via happenstance as opposed to an intentional suspense put in. And that to me is too frustrating. I feel the suspense a little bit, but more what I end up feeling is this is really clunky and frustrating for me because I can't move the way I want to move. I'd rather have a game with good controls that then creates suspense through plot design and music choice and lighting elements.
Well, the problem with those, they've been done. Too. Well, I was going to say Demon's Souls, because that leads into what I'm going to buy next week.
Okay. What are you buying next week?
Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah.
Sequel to Demon's Souls, which everybody should buy because it's coming out on 360, so now there's no excuse.
Is it?
And by the way,
I'll totally buy it.
There was a press release put out by Atlas that they were going to continue putting out the server, and they thinly hinted, if you don't have the money to spend $60 on the sequel, why don't you spend $20 on this game? Because servers are going to be live until well into 2012.
That's actually a smart move, because, it sucks that Atlas is getting screwed out of getting to publish the second one, because, they are responsible for it being such a big deal.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And also because Bandai didn't send us a review copy, 2 months in advance, Atlas did. I don't think we're going to get a review copy from them. They're not very good about that. But
they're sending Ace Combat, baby.
Well, tell them Ace Combat's not Dark Souls and send it back to them. Say, fuck you, Sean wants Dark Souls.
Flying a helicopter versus getting your ass kicked by a skeleton. It's up to you.
But anyway, that's a good game that does tension really well, and it does it by you still feel in control and powerful, but you're 3 hours away from the last time you had a checkpoint, and you're not quite at that next checkpoint yet, and man, everything can kill you.
I
agree.
Remember when we were playing Dark Souls at E3 and you died and I said, hey, let me handle it. And I walked up to a skeleton. And he
totally died.
E3 demo was bullshit. And if that's how the whole game is, that's not cool.
I just walked away with my ego just crushed.
The E3 demo, there's a couple skeletons, okay, whatever. And then there's this one samurai that has this one-shot kill.
Yeah.
And part of the thing, too, is that the E3 demo, your character's over-encumbered, right off the bat. Mm. So you're moving, super slow, and then here comes this guy who's like, oh, stab. What the fuck? And they're like, oh, Dark Souls sure is hard, huh? And I'm like, I don't like it just because it's hard. I like it because it's a good game. And if you took a challenging game and turned it into a bunch of, cheap kill mechanics, I'm going to be upset.
I doubt they did.
How have you guys played yet Fear 3? Because Fear 2 I really liked for suspenseness. Was 3 any good?
3 was good for co-op, but as far as suspense, no.
Yeah.
It's a very action-oriented shooter. And it's a competent shooter. It feels lively, but as far as suspense, I can't recommend it as a horror game.
Horror game?
Oh, there I go again. As a horror without the W.
Horror.
But I don't know. That's a thing about video games, is that the horror genre has nothing to do with being scared anymore. It has everything to do with these settings now. And Fear is definitely a good example of that, where it's like, well, you're not going to be scared by any of this anymore because you're super powerful, you have a gun, hordes of zombies just fall down. There's nothing scary about that.
Right,
which is really strange. They would pay John Carpenter all this money to sign off and say he wrote the script on it.
Because that's a bullet point that people might buy. Are you a John Carpenter fan? You like video games? Here's a video game by John Carpenter.
He did it. You'll like it. Do it.
Not too different from, Tom, hey, Clancy. Sean, you like Captain America? Here's a game with Captain America in it. You'll buy it. Sure as hell will.
Yes, I will.
Do you like Tom Clancy books? You'll love this Tom Clancy game.
I love how he's not allowed to say Tom Clancy's anymore. Nothing he owns is Tom Clancy's anything. It is a thing that is owned by Tom Clancy.
It would take a pretty good paycheck to have to do something like that.
I bet it did.
It gets pretty screwed up when you get to the point where someone owns your intellectual property.
But what does Tom Clancy do anymore? He doesn't write his books.
Right. He writes books still.
No, he doesn't. I think there's a ghostwriter.
He releases books. Let me put it that way.
He signs when
you
off
get
on
to,
it.
When you get to the point,
I don't think Tom Clancy comes up to you and says, "No, I think he's dead and he passed away, and they just used his name."
But Rob, if somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, listen, we're Ubisoft and we want to make Robert Allen games, but we don't want you to have any input on it. But here's a couple million dollars." You wouldn't want to do anything for the rest of your life either.
Sure.
Captain Man,
write that check.
I would never want to get to the point where my name was no longer mine to be used. I mean, that's like what happened to What's-His-Face, the CCR guy. But that's what happened to
John
him.
John Fogerty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The hell did I know that? Wow.
I don't know, but I'm really glad you did. But that's what happened to him is that, you know, they sort of bought all his songs. So then when he wasn't with them anymore, they were like, you can't use your songs. You can't play them. You can't sing them. And he was like, I they're mine. And they're like, no, too bad.
That's the same thing that the families of Jack Kirby and the guys who made Superman have been fighting that fight for longer than either of them have been dead at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But
true.
The whole idea that they made Superman and Jack Kirby made all these superheroes for Marvel. But they did them while they were working for these companies, right. So those companies own them.
You know who I blame?
Who?
The lawyers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm of the opinion that that's absolutely correct. You know, I'm working for this company that I work for. I might make a computer program for them. That doesn't make me own it because they're paying me to make a computer. The Clearwater thing's different, but I'm just saying that.
Right, but that is the difference. Like, I would agree with you normally, but I would say, and that's, I mean, intellectual property rights become a big battle, but if you creatively invented something and it's an artistic thing and your name is attached to it, and then they won't even let you use your name in conjunction with that thing anymore, that's like a, I mean, that just seems like so much garbage to me.
Well, here's the other, because he's part of a group, right? So let's say you, me, and Rob and Blue start a band, and we're writing songs together. And then I hate all of you, so I leave.
That can very well happen.
And there's a
I'm kidding.
but there's a verse in one of our songs that talks in very graphic detail about the time where Robert was molested by his dog or something. It's really personal to him. Song we all wrote together.
What?
And I, after having a falling out with the band, and sing that song about Rob to make money. I mean, is that necessarily fair
every
to him?
Every rose has its thorn? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, it's every bell has its thorn.
Oh, you didn't.
That's fucked up. No, I see what you're saying. I still feel like it's sort of problematic, but I think there's that weird middle ground, like on things where you are working for a company and you make a product that seems pretty clear cut and dry, like okay, it belongs to the company, and stuff where you make it and it doesn't, and it was made by you, only by you, and it's copyrighted by you, then that's pretty clear. But the middle ground is that weird, like, what if it's collaboration, or even worse, what if you did it but you sold it to someone and then you want to be able to use it again? And that's where it's like, well, you should have had a better contract written up for yourself is what you should have done.
Well, that's the problem with video games in general right now. Things like Battletoads. Do you know who owns Battletoads?
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, Rare made the original, and then somebody else made the ports.
Rare.
Yeah, Microsoft owns Rare, but somebody else made the ports. And then the last game that was actually made was made by EA. Rare had nothing to do with it. So it's like, who owns the Battletoads? Who even created the Battletoads? Nobody knows.
That's really funny. And shitty.
They should just make combat frogs.
Well, no, my thing is that I wish somebody would make a Battletoads game and then be like, all right, somebody come and sue me so I can know who owns this. Just announce they're making a Battletoads game.
Let's jump into trivia.
Yes, please.
Okay.
What?
Even though Sean nearly spoiled our first question, this week PS3 owners get to step into the well-worn boots of space miner John Rochard in the downloadable game, which shares the wonderful everyman's last name. But the big question is, what game character shares Rochard's voice actor? Is it A, Marcus Fenix, B, Duke Nukem, C, Kratos, D, Agent 47, or E, Gordon Freeman? I'm glad
Gordon
you got
Freeman
the joke,
is the equivalent
Blue.
Of putting it in, isn't it?
Yes.
Yay.
I'm going to say I'm going to say Mark is Phoenix.
I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B? Okay, Blue.
I'm going to go with Kratos.
You go with Kratos. You guys got the Gordon Freeman joke?
Yes.
He didn't talk. Correct answer, Duke Nukem. John St. John, baby.
Ah, you're right. Damn it.
Did you tell it was John St. John?
I can hear it now that you said it.
Yeah. Very cool. Number two, Alchemy fans, take note. This week, Atelier Totori will have you synthesizing items until you're blue in the face.
Brown.
Brown?
Did you just say brown?
Brown.
Brown.
Well, the game's subtitle was The Adventure of Arlandis in the United States. What was the game's Japanese subtitle? A, Grown Grown? No. A, Destiny of the Lost? B, Forgotten Fate? C, Eternal Alchemy 2? Or D, The Alchemist of Arland 2?
C.
I'm going to go with D.
C.
Correct answer, Blue knew. Alchemist of Arland 2, D.
Damn it.
That sounded like long enough of a subtitle that like most Japanese other ones, games put on.
I put Destiny, Forgotten, Eternal. I put all the catchphrases to try to lure you guys in.
Well, I knew Alchemy was in it, so that's why I picked C, but...
Okay.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. There's always the next question, number three. All the following are true about the original Code Veronica, except A, it was the first Resident Evil game for a non-Sony system. B, it was the first Resident Evil game to have 3D backgrounds instead of pre-rendered ones. C, it was the first Resident Evil game to add 100-degree turns to the protagonist's repertoire. D, it was the first time players were introduced to Steve Burnside.
A is not true. Yes.
Resident Evil 3.
A is the one that is not true.
Well, no, Resident Evil 3 on Dreamcast came out after Code Veronica. But Resident Evil 2 on the Tiger GameCom came out before.
I saw a GameCom in a used store a couple of days ago.
So your answer, you guys?
A is the answer.
A is the answer.
Yes, correct. Good job, guys. Okay, back to Gamescom. You saw one? How much was it?
Yes, I saw they. I think it was boxed too, or boxed or sealed.
Not
it was
worth
like
it.
$70.
Not worth it.
Take it from somebody who owned one back in the day. There is not a single game on the GameCom that makes it worth owning.
Yeah, $7 a collector's item. $70. Get the hell out of here. Number four.
GTFO.
Yeah.
GTFO.
This week's ultimate battle for the sexes pits gender against gender in an array of stereotype-based minigames, which isn't one of the challenges. A, drunken pub crawling. B, parallel parking. C, kitchen multitasking. D, shaving your legs. Or E, covert farting.
Wait, what?
I'm
going to
say pub crawling.
Which isn't one of the minigames in ultimate battle for the sexes.
Oh, it's got to be parallel park.
No, which one is not a battle?
Yes.
Right.
So I'm going to say kitchen multitasking.
Tasking.
Touching.
Everybody
buzz in now.
I'm going to go with parallel parking.
I'm going to go with A, I guess. I don't know.
Correct answer. E, covert farting.
Damn it. Really? I wanted to be that so bad.
Yeah, I really wanted that to be one too. What the fuck?
Yeah, that maybe
not
would
fart.
Have made it worthwhile. Five, who let the dogs out? XE did when they released Solo to Robo this week to appease the appetite of hungry DS owners, especially the ones that don't have their system on the top shelf. Speaking of animals, which of the following tail concerto creatures did not make a cameo appearance in Red the Hunter? A, Panta. B, Cyan Garland. C, Waffle Rye Bread. Or D, Alicia Priss.
B.
Waffle Fry Bread.
C.
I didn't hear Sage.
I said Waffle Fry Bread.
And you own the game?
Dude, I don't. I've only played so far. I have no fucking idea who doesn't show up. Come on, give me a break.
Speaking of animals.
Yeah!
There's a time.
So I'm guessing she got it wrong.
Yes, correct answer. Sean got it. B, Cyan Garland.
Well, fine.
Wow.
Can't see my dance.
So, tally them all up, guys. How'd you do?
I think I got two.
I think I got one.
I think
I got one,
right?
No, yeah, two. I got two. Yay, two.
You passed, then. to him.
Yay! Bonus question. This past Saturday was the 20th anniversary of Nirvana's Nevermind album. To celebrate, Harmonix published a new Nirvana track pack for Rock Band that featured the band's last finished song before the death of Kurt Cobain. Released for the first time on the band's 2002 self-titled Greatest Hits album, what was the final song? A. Do Re Mi. B. All Apologies. C. Verse, Chorus, Verse. Or D. You Know You're Right.
D. You Know You're Right.
D. That was said with conviction.
Which one, Sean?
Dog.
Delta.
Delta.
The other one's from... were released.
Sage?
I agree with my co-host.
And you would be correct, because you all know you're right.
Yay.
Yeah. The other ones were from In Utero, right? Or Cheap Puffs?
I think All Apologies was on In Utero, and Do Re Mi and Verse, Chorus, Verse were off of the With the Lights Out demo outtake box set that came out.
There's so much music in this show.
Yeah, right? How did that happen?
Let's talk about country music some more. That was fun.
I hate country music.
Shania Twain.
So let's move on to our mailbag.
I love you, Sean.
Sometimes. Oh, I don't know who sent this in because it doesn't say in the outline. So whoever it is, I love you. Sometimes I think G4 is getting his aid. Their Dead Island trailer is the best trailer I've ever seen in my life, the best video game trailer, the best movie trailer, the best anything trailer, quote, seems like it was written by Deep Silver. Let's hear your thoughts on that and how a movie would stand a chance of being good. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think I had the opposite effect by the trailer, where it was a good trailer, and that made me skeptical of the game. And I know a lot of people like that trailer, and, you know, good for a lot of people. It was a really well-made trailer, and I know that it cost Deep Silver a lot of money. I don't think it has anything to do with G4 getting paid off. And also, I think it's hilarious that they're making a movie about the trailer and not the game.
Wait, they are making a movie about the trailer?
Yes, they are making a movie that is based on literally the trailer.
Well, I want to say Dead Island isn't the best trailer or the best anything trailer. My experience, the best trailer was the student-owned converted double Y trailer, which served as a nice little dive bar my undergrad years. So I remember, probably 8 p.m. one night, there was this mix of construction workers and college students, you know, which keeps things interesting. And one time I had a few drinks, Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville came on the jukebox, and I decided it had been about the fifth time I heard the song. So I had heard enough. I went to the bathroom, flipped the breaker, marked front outlet, and that turned out to be a catalyst for a really cathartic bar brawl.
So, I love how much you hate that song.
Yes, I cannot stand Margaritaville.
Margaritaville.
Oh my god.
I'm going to cut you off.
This year, I don't know if anybody heard it, but there is actually a Jimmy Buffett MMO coming out. It might already be out.
No way.
Yeah, because we passed.
I hope Anonymous just shuts that down.
But every time we passed it, they'd be playing Margaritaville because that's their gimmick.
Oh yeah.
I started singing along, and Deagle shot me the dirtiest.
It's true. I remember that. I had to keep them apart. I thought Deagle was gonna kill Sean.
Good times, fun oldies.
By the way, can I just interject real quick? I was re-looking at some Solo to Robo stuff just to check something on my DS, which is sitting right here next to me, and he literally just said, "You mean I should just put it in?" So apparently that's in every game in the world. Also, I think it makes sense to turn the trailer into a movie because, unlike the game, the trailer is decent and not crap.
I think Dead Island, just the name alone, would sell a pretty decent amount
of movies. Totally, but like, you know,
on an island.
Well, I think the setting could be good. I mean, I could see it as this kind of overexposed, super sun drenched kind of look, which could set the film apart from I don't know, like the dark, dreary type zombie movies. And I think a couple of things, at least a zombie movie, needs to be a success. One, eliminate any comedic elements. I just go for broke and make it dark as hell. I mean, the good zombie movies that have stood the test of time, like Dawn of the Dead, 28 Days, 28 Months. When Bub did that salute in Day of the Dead, that almost just ruins the goddamn film for me, the whole thing. I think pacing is really important. I think if you need to have a good script that kind of ratchets up the tension. I could see this, like, I don't know, this unnerving chase sequence to get to, like, some rescue boat. Like, the first one was blown up, coming to the other side of the island. You know, something like that. I'd like to see a good ending chase sequence, thinking, like, Mad Max.
I would like to see a horror movie that you go in knowing it's a horror movie, and then you get a romantic comedy, and right when you're at the point where you're going to walk out, boom, zombie comes in.
That was Shaun of the Dead.
No, Shaun of the Dead was a zombie movie with a couple jokes every now and then it forgot that it was funny, and then at the end it's like, oh, by the way, we're still funny, right?
What? Yeah, Shut up. Shaun of the Dead's hilarious.
It's a good movie. I don't think it's... I think it's an okay zombie movie, and I don't think it's as funny as it makes itself out to be.
I think it's pretty funny. I don't know.
I think at some point they sacrifice their humor so they can make it a zombie movie, and they, like, at the end they're like, oh shit, fuck, jokes, right? You like that? Yeah,
they did. Sorry,
chain the zombie up in the back house and make it play video games all the time.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but to me it felt like a nice blend of comedy and zombie movie.
I'm kind of with Sean. It did abandon everything for that bar sequence.
Yeah,
it's not to say it's not an enjoyable film, but yeah. No. Looking at it from that kind of stylistic standpoint, it wasn't funny anymore after a certain point.
Yeah, I think their other movies were better. That's basically what I'm getting at.
All I ask from a zombie movie is that they don't nuke the entire scene or setting or whatever, just as a way to end the movie. That drives me crazy when you have this whole big build up. Is somebody going to live? Who's going to live? Who's going to die? And we're just going to fucking kill everybody.
Which zombie movies did that?
I think, was it the original Dawn of the Dead or something?
No, Dawn of the Dead turns into a whole bunch of other movies.
No, Dawn of the Dead, they escape via helicopter, right?
Yeah, and in the reboot, they kind of do that. What they do is they make them escape by boat, and then during the credits, you find out that the island that they escaped to is already infested by zombies, and then they all die.
Yeah, which is kind of Dead Island-ish. They already did it.
I don't know. I think that that's a normal horror movie thing to have most people who are of, like, the initial party die, because that makes it seem like a very serious thing is actually happening. You have most people in the surrounding town, village, what have you, die, because that's what makes it seem hopeless. And then you have two and or sometimes three, but usually three make it till almost the end and then another one of them dies. And then that's, I don't know, that's like standard horror formula. That's not like particularly a zombie thing. That's a horror movie thing.
I hate it when they kill off every single character, because it defeats the point of watching the movie to begin with, at least to me.
But they almost never... there's usually at least one girl or one guy left alive. It's not usually they kill off everybody.
Yeah, otherwise who's going to pork at the end?
Right.
Or be in the sequel.
You know what, a zombie movie that I would watch, we're way off topic, I'm sorry, we need to wrap this show up, but the one zombie movie I think I would watch would be if they mixed zombie movies and Scream, so it's like a guy trying to make the perfect zombie movie with actual zombies. I think that could work as a premise.
Totally.
Yeah, that could work. I'm a little bit over the self-referential movie.
I am too, but I feel like zombies have become so self-referential that just doing one that completely rapes the fourth wall is the only logical step.
Rape's never funny, Sean.
When it's a wall, it is, because walls have no feelings.
Oh, God!
Raping a wall is hilarious. They can't feel anything.
It's an inanimate object.
So, you hear that, everybody? Rape is okay as long as you're raping an inanimate object.
Oh, my God. We're done. This show is
show is so
I apologize for this show, but if you
I don't
still like
neither
it,
do I
and after you listen to it you can check out other episodes and other written words at www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. If you like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, which I can't understand why you would, Robert Allen is at @tech_gaming. Sean Kirkland, that's me, is at Sean Nola with two N's. Sage Morris Green is at Samurage. That's Samurage. And Dynamite Fandango is at, I'm reading this right off the script, at Blue Swim, all one word.
Said I'm so.
I don't like how the show almost ended with mutiny.
Oh, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Keep in mind there are two tech gaming podcasts on iTunes. They're both us, but one of them ends abruptly because we switched our RSS feed. So subscribe to both of them if you want to listen to old episodes, but just make sure you're subscribing to the one that has 8-5 in it because that's us. I mean, they're both us, but if you want to keep getting episodes, just make sure you're subscribed to the right one. And that's it. And there's a picture of Captain America wearing a cowboy hat at the bottom of this.
Which I love.
I put that what? There.
And tech gaming is tech gaming, and if you see our words copied and pasted onto someone else's website, just remember you heard it first at techgaming.com.
They heard it first somewhere else, but they should have heard it first at techgaming.com.
Hey, well, Captain that America was the implication. Starts. Right. Anyway, yay, done.
The show. Thanks for listening.
Finish.
Yay!